Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org. I'm Lou Bank.
And I'm Greg Rutkowski of Finca the S.E.O.C.H.O.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Grand Gags bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico.
Let's go.
Hey, I like this enthusiasm. That's good. Hey, so Greg, you reached out to me. I think you reached out to me. Maybe I reached out to you. I can't honestly remember now that I'm saying it, but we had a conversation as you are setting up your what do you call it out there? Is it a vinata? Is it a taberna?
It's a distillery. Taberna is for ICEA. So we're just calling it Agave Spirits Distillery.
Okay, look, that's very gringo of you. I appreciate that. So as you're setting up your distillery, you're also setting up some fields of agave that you will, right? Okay. And so I must have read a post where you were writing about the difficulty you were having in acquiring seeds. And, you know, as Sacred has been funding the build out of some greenhouses in Jalisco, but also, you know, other places, but especially in Jalisco, with the very specific intent of, among other things, growing from seed Blue Weber Agave Tequilana, I noted that you were having troubles acquiring the seeds, which made me nervous for my plans, Greg.
It made me nervous for the tequila industry.
Right. So tell me about that. Tell me about your journey of trying to acquire the seeds. And then, you know, and then once you did acquire them, what happens after that?
Yeah. So it's kind of a crazy story. And the main thing here is that we were looking to grow agaves on our 12 acre project. And, you know, we're in Puerto Vallarta, right next to basically the epicenter of tequila, like just like 3.5 hours away. And so we were like, okay, well, let's go find some Blue Weber agave seeds. And, you know, we could either use it ourselves or be able to sell it locally here, you know, since we're within the denomination of origin. And it was really, really important to me to be able to grow our own agave from seed, because I knew how important seeds are to the sustainability of agaves just in general in the wild and, you know, within the agave spirits context as well. So lo and behold, I did a lot of searching. I talked to all the semilleros, which are the seed harvesters that I could find through references and through Facebook.
So and roughly how many do you think you contacted, Greg?
I would say up to 20. There's more people contacted outside of the seed context too, and I'll explain why. So I contacted all these semilleros, and they were pointing me in different directions, and I got closer and closer, but nobody had Blue Weber seeds. So you know, I was like trying to, I guess, look for people within Jalisco, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I started kind of getting alarmed when the agaveros, who are the people who grow the agave here, were sending me pictures of hijuelos, thinking that they were agaves grown from seed.
So they thought they were? They figured that you would think?
I don't know if they thought that, you know, that they could trick me, or if they actually thought that the hijuelos were the seeds of the agave. And so this is kind of like my frustration with all of this, is that I didn't find any seeds in all of Jalisco.
You know, I'll tell you, when one of our posts went up about the rewilding project that we're doing in Zapotitlan de Vadillo, or that we're funding, we're not doing it ourselves. We were contacted by somebody through Instagram, through a DM, suggesting that we were trying to turn Blue Weber into a monoculture by growing things from seed. It was upside down. And it was a long conversation that we still haven't concluded. It's been a year now. This was a guy who has fields of Blue Weber who says, no, that's not how Blue Weber grows. The seeds do come from the roots. And which suggests that, you know, he certainly doesn't get it. And he said he was second or third generation growing Blue Weber in Jalisco this way. And like, no, it never goes to like seed in that way. You don't get seed pods, is in essence what he was trying to claim.
Yes. Yeah, that's 100% correct. And I think is a reflection of my experience as well.
Right. And of course, the danger, just to put a fine point to it, the danger in this is when you're using hijuelos, the little offshoots that come out of the roots of the agave, as opposed to growing the agave from seed, you're getting a genetic clone of the mother plant.
Yeah. And in essence, the tequila that you're drinking has been cloned, like at least the raw material, it's called materia prima, is like cloned for the last 400 years or so, you know? So like, it's kind of cool to say, hey, I'm drinking 400 year old agave, but at the same time, it's the scariest thing in the world because the plants are not as enduring as they once were, you know, they're not getting as much genetic variety as they once did, you know?
Yeah, but you know, like I have to push back against the idea that it's 400 years old. And the reason I'd push back against that is because of that blight that was, what, 1999, when something like 60% of the Blue Weber disappeared. I gotta believe that at that point, somebody somewhere had to find seeds and had to, some of those plants had to be germinated, right?
I've been really interested in that story as well, because since like the 60s or 70s, there's been four main blights or diseases that have really like impacted the agave, the Blue Weber agave specifically. So there was one in the 70s, like it's every 10 years.
Really?
I believe. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so we're way overdue for one then. It's been like 20.
I believe so.
Oh, that's nice. That's a pleasant thought. Huh. Wow. So, okay. So then if that's the case, if it really has been that kind of cyclical collapse, then maybe they really are just each time they rebuild, each time the community of Jalisco rebuilds, maybe it really is just hijuelos.
Well, I would think that the plants that didn't get the disease, they would consider the most like strong, and they would want to use those hijuelos instead of the ones that got the disease. So they're
you know, I'm sorry, something else that just struck me is, isn't it in 1970, I want to say 1974, that they decided you can only use Blue Weber?
That's a good question. I'm not exactly sure on that one.
I think that's correct. You know, my pal Alberto sent me the original declaration, the original nome from Mexico, and I'm pretty sure it was like 1974 where they declared, okay, only Blue Weber now. The first time officially, like, there was any legal documentation within the country. Oh. And I wonder if that's somehow tied to that blight that you saw in the 60s.
Yeah, it could be. And you know, the other thing too is that, like, one thing I do know for sure is that Blue Weber agave has been held in the highest regard out of the agaves that were available to make tequila. So that's kind of why it's here today, is because it was the most popular to use, you know, at least in the region.
I wasn't around then. You weren't around then. I'm hard pressed to believe, given how rapidly it reaches maturity, that somehow it was the best because it was the most delicious, right? Like somehow it strikes me that maybe it's because it's the one that's easiest to grow. Maybe
just like Angustifolia, Espadine.
Yeah,
same
yep.
situation there. Absolutely.
Yeah, though that also leaves me scratching my head as to why you don't see more mescaleros using tequilana, given that it actually grows more rapidly, particularly in a farm setting, than angustifolia. But maybe we're going to get there once the whole mezcal industry starts growing from Mihuelos as well.
It's kind of a scary thought.
Yeah. You know, six months back, something like that, I was driving through Oaxaca and there it was on the roadside. First time I'd ever seen it was a big old truck with Espadini Huelos in the back.
Ah, okay.
But yeah, so we're certainly on that path. But anyway, to get back to the story of the Blue Weber and the Jalisco. So you couldn't find it in Jalisco, but there are five states where they're growing Blue Weber for the purposes of making tequila. Did you look in all those states?
Well, yes, because I was like all the, I guess, Facebook groups that I'm a part of that are, they're called like agavero, like Facebook groups. So this is where it's like Facebook is the main marketplace in Mexico and where everybody hangs out, right? So I pretty much sought out every Facebook group in Mexico that had anything to do with agave, looking for Blue Weber seeds. And nice. It wasn't until I landed in Oaxaca where I found two semilleros that had tequilana seeds. And we were able to find, it was like very, very small. Like we're talking like 12 kilos, you know, if you're thinking about the whole Blue Weber tequila industry in general, we're talking a lot of agave, millions, right? And so the amount of Blue Weber seeds that I found was also very alarming for me, you know, like it wasn't like these 12 kilos is not enough to do anything with, like,
Well, how many seeds do you think there are in a kilo? I mean, that actually sounds like a lot of seeds to me.
Well, yeah. So it's 200,000 seeds per kilo, roughly, right? And not all of them are going to germinate.
Roughly, not exactly. Really? One, two, three. Sorry.
I had to do a little tested. Like I made like a square inch and counted it.
Of course you did.
You know? And it came out to about 200,000, and it was verified by the semillero, like around the same range. And like in that context, 12 kilos is, it could be a lot of seeds, right? But also like the availability of seeds in general, there's like thousands of kilos on the market, you know, but we're talking only 12 kilos.
Gotcha. Like, that you were capable of finding.
Correct.
But, you know, but I think that also speaks to the fact that, you know, the tequila industry doesn't seem real keen on growing agave from seed.
And I completely understand why, though, too, because, when we were talking about propagating the Blue Weber, you know, in terms of profit, like it's the same reason for the Hijuelo and the seeds, because the seeds are infinitely more times harder to grow than an Hijuelo. And so When you have an Hijuelo, you just let it, you know, you do your normal cleaning every couple of weeks out in the field, and the Hijuelo grows just normally. There's no, you don't have to worry about watering it because it's getting fed from the mother plant. All you have to do is when it becomes mature enough is you just cut it and throw it in the truck. But with seeds, you have to germinate the seed. You have to transplant it in different gardens like three or four times before you actually have to plant it out in the field. You have to pick the weeds by hand from these little gardens, and it takes like a year of really, really hard work just to grow seeds. Versus Hijuelos, all you have to do is just, you know, walk by in the field and cut it off and replant it, and you're ready to go.
And you're saying all of this, I'm guessing, from experience, because you finally got those 12 kilos and then you started germinating. And started, or have you already Where are you in the process?
We planted, we started germinating in December. We had 50,000 seeds germinated, and we are getting ready and have planted a bunch already. So like they're already getting, you know, in the last 8 months, they're already starting to have spines on them, which is basically tells you they're ready to plant. So, you know, between germinating and now, though, there was a tremendous amount of work involved. I had no idea. And I don't think most people really have a clue on what it takes to bring this agave from seed into your glass of mezcal, you know?
It's a fair point. As you're aware, and because you know you very kindly offered me some seeds. God bless you, or not me, I guess, but sacred, because you wouldn't give them to me. What the hell would I do with them? They don't grow in Chicago. But we purchased these seedlings from El Manantial, the middle school in Zachila, and that's that's part of the replanting agave program that that sacred funds. Where we hand out groupings of 500, 750 seedlings to mescaleros around Oaxaca. And, you know, it's traditionally, since we started that, the vast majority of what we've been handing out is Tobala. And this last year, we got a little crazy and we did 8 or 9 different varieties of agave. But the school, the middle school, like they were so used to the Potatorum, to the Tobala seeds, and they knew what to do with those, but man, did they have a headache with all the other seeds. Their germination rate with Tobala, you know, it's certainly in the 90 percentile, but with the other seedlings, man, they struggled, and I suspect they're closer to like 20%.
You know, something interesting there is my Tequiliana seeds in particular germinated a lot slower than my other seeds from Oaxaca. Like I have like 9 or 10 other species that germinated so much quicker than these tequila seeds. This also like is kind of a scary thing for me too. Is like I'm just kind of curious if you know the whole species like it is. I don't know. I don't want to say endangered, but like I feel like something's going on. You know what I mean?
Oh.
Like, why are these seeds germinating slower than my other seeds? And you know, you just gave me confirmation on that too, because yeah. I remember we were talking with somebody that works with you, and they're like, hey, you know, like we're having kind of a tough time getting these things to sprout. I was like, well, yeah, like I was actually too, so I'm glad it's not just me. But well, I'm also very scared.
You know, like, honestly, that doesn't concern me. I think, you know, everything in nature has its own clock. And, I the fact that it takes longer for Blue Weber to germinate, and I'm not a botanist. I don't play one on TV. But that strikes me as just, okay, that's that plant. If they hadn't germinated at all, that would concern me, but they did. The thing that concerns me is the fact that it takes that much time is just yet another reason for all of these Blue Weber farmers in Jalisco to continue using this monoculture, genetically homogenous Blue Weber clone that, you know, as you say, collapses roughly every 10 years, and now we're overdue by about 13 years. So, you know, when that happens, I think about all of this agriculture collapsing. I think about this financial resource for these communities collapsing. I think about how it's displaced all of the food sources for these communities because they figured, well, we'll make more money growing Blue Weber so we can buy twice as many beans as we could grow and still have a profit. I think about all of the dangers of this collapse and how it's going to affect quality of life for these people.
Yeah, you know, and especially in terms of the Blue Weber world, where Ichuelos are so prevalent, like if you have, at least right now, you know, in the current state of things, a guy selling Blue Weber agave that's grown from seed isn't going to make any more money than if he sold Ichuelos. So
right.
He has way more an incentive to sell the Ichuelos because it's infinitely less work too, you know? So I don't really see a situation where this is going to get fixed anytime soon, unless I've been thinking about this for a little bit, unless agaves grown from seed have a, like command a higher price point at the bars and restaurants and liquor stores.
I get why you would say that, because you and I come from this world, and you know, and I think Jalisco by and large has become our world. But you know, there are certainly parts of Jalisco that look more to me like the parts of Oaxaca and Puebla and Michoacán,
right?
That I love. Yeah, right, exactly. Where they've got that different worldview of, you know, it's not what's most efficient, but what's the best result. And it's not, you know, I'm not saying that they don't want or need money in these communities, but I do think that they've got I don't want to paint this with a broad brush. I certainly don't want to fetishize it and piss off Cisco. But I, you know, I do think that there's this intellect and this worldview that's smarter than ours, that isn't just thinking about, well, how do I get more money right now? That's not focused on the next 20 minutes. That's focused on, what does life look like for my child and my grandchild? And so I hear what you're saying. I don't think that's possible, that anybody drinking, you know, you and I maybe, but if you look at mezcal sales as 2% of tequila sales, and you figure that the vast majority of people drinking mezcal aren't us, right? That's mainly cocktail mezcal. Like there's no way that our enthusiasm for genetic diversity within Blue Weber is ever going to even just like make a dent.
No,
or
not at all.
Ding it right in tequila. So I really do think that it has to be something else. It has to be these, you know, maybe there's communities in these other four states. Maybe there's places in Michoacán where they recognize this. Maybe it's incumbent upon people like you and I who are enthusiasts to fund beyond our consumption to try and ensure that these things that we love can continue to be things that exist.
You know, and you made a great point there. And that's one thing I really love about Mexico is that they have such a long-term vision here, way more than the United States, like as far as like passing things down, like, you know, through the heritage or just making a plan like for something. Like they think about like the consequences, like, you know, generations out. And you know, I just love that kind of mentality. And it was kind of eye-opening for me moving to Mexico and seeing I guess that mentality. Yeah. And you know, as long as that keeps going, I think there's a really good hope, you know, for agave spirits in general. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I hope so too. But again, I think it's important to distinguish that you're saying they, but when you say they, you're thinking of very specific people. Right?
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I think the real danger is that we up here in the USA, or I guess, I mean, you're down in Mexico, but you get what I'm saying, that the broader world just keeps consuming at this rate, and we consume Jalisco. We consume these communities that are they you're talking about, but we force our consumption patterns onto their world. And their lands that had been wild lands that they were using to forage food, to harvest their agave, suddenly become fields of Blue Weber in service of my tequila consumption.
Yeah, that's 100% correct. And mezcal's moving that direction too in Ricea. Like,
yeah,
the mezcaleros are starting to experiment with things that cater more to the palate of the gringo.
Yeah. You know, my great hope is that, you know, projects like yours, right, where you've now planted a seed, literally, you've taken root in Jalisco with this project, growing Blue Weber from seed. Projects like what David Ciro is doing with the Rosales family at Cascaween, where they're trying to move the clock backwards and take take projects in Jalisco and make them more like they would have looked 100, 150 years ago, that maybe, you know, there's some hope that we don't turn all of Mexico into Jalisco, that instead Jalisco starts turning more back in time into something like Puebla.
I think you might be right about that for a couple of reasons. One mainly is because the market is kind of dictating it.
No.
You don't think so? Like,
oh God, no, not at all.
The tequila industry. Some people, like the more artisanal brands, are incorporating maybe like an underground oven.
Without question, you're seeing more of it, but it's this tiny, tiny, tiny little spot in this huge universe.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that means it's something you can dismiss. I think it's important, but I think it's like the seed itself. This needs to be germinated and nurtured and protected, and we need patience to see it come to fruition. But I think it's going to take a lot of resources, just as your seeds are taking a lot of resources, in order to ensure that it takes root.
Yes, that's without a doubt.
Okay, I think that was a beautiful metaphor, and I don't know that I've got anything else in me. Okay, perfect. Then I think, unless you got something else for me, Greg, I think we call this a wrap.
I do have one other thing. I have been seeing some artisanal brands using or letting their fields grow to, you know, full maturity, and they're starting to harvest some seeds. I don't know how many they're
really
able to get. Yeah. I don't know if I can mention some specific brands here, but
yeah, please.
Yeah, like G4. I have been seeing them portion out of their field, let it go to full maturity, and they're actually harvesting the pods from the Quixote. So this was kind of right after I started my journey. I saw a couple people doing this. So I'm really excited about that. Yeah.
That's awesome. You know, I've been really disappointed to keep checking in on the Bat Friendly Tequila website and seeing that they still haven't certified any tequila as bat friendly since 2016. So seeing that there are actors outside of that who are taking their own initiative to ensure that agaves are going to seed and that bats have places to eat. I like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Okay. Well, then on that note, we'll call that a wrap. Thanks so much for your time, Greg. Appreciate you joining me.
Thank you, Lou.
Hasta pronto. You've been listening to Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico. We're blessed with sound engineering by Roy Sierra and a theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Marco Ricos. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, well, I'm sure you'll let us know that too. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Agave Road Trip. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pit Bulls, Inc. Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization using the power of educational storytelling about food to build a more equitable, resilient food system. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network might lead you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If you drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly, drive responsibly, eat responsibly too, and listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive. Do not walk either. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to stretch every 30 minutes. If you stretch every 30 minutes, please stay within your defined stressing capacity and consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you don't have a doctor, maybe Dr. Ryan Acock, the Cocktail MD, can help you out. Thanks for listening.
Agave Road Trip out.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaili, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.